Now, I'm looking for that. I opened up the Bible and opened up in Matthew 5:44. And it said, and I say unto you, now you shall forgive those who mistreat you, love those, all that stuff I didn't want to hear, and I cried again. And I started praying for the guys. And one guy was an atheist, and before I left there, he was praying twice a day. And the other guy got thrown out. So there's some verses that God had gave me, because I knew I had to change. And he gave me some scriptures that I held on to. And one was, be anxious for nothing, but with all things with prayer and supplication, making requests known unto God. With prayer, supplication, and thanksgiving, make your request known unto God, and peace will pass through understanding, Lord, and our heart and mind. And I kept it. I held that. The other one was, you know, I knew I had to change. I didn't know how. And he gave me, don't be conformed to the ways of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you might know the just, pure, perfect will of
God. Acceptable.
Yeah, the will of God. He gave me that. And then when I was dealing with fornication, he gave me pray that you don't enter into temptation. And I questioned him about that. I said, I'm praying all the time, but it's not helping. He kept giving me pray that you don't enter into temptation. And I said, I don't see how that can help. I'm praying to you all the time. And he just convicted me in the spirit, just try it. And I started praying that I wouldn't enter into temptation. He started letting me see temptation come down the street, hear it on the telephone, and confront it. And I did that. And he blessed me with that. And I kept hearing when your life changes, you start doing things different. I started listening to different radio stations because I knew that what I put in my mind had a direct result on the actions that came out of me. And so I started listening to the Word radio station, and they started talking about Geneva College, the grief completion program. And I said, well, you know, I tried to go to Pitt. No, 10 years ago, and they wouldn't take my credit card tool. I know Geneva won't take me, but I said, no, look at the record I got now. So the Spirit kept convicting me, well, just, you know, see. And I did. And they said, okay, well, just send us a letter, write a little autobiography about yourself. And I wrote them and told them all the dirty, low-down stuff that I ever did. And they said, we'd be glad to have you. So I went to Geneva College, and in Geneva College, I couldn't write. Had a hard time studying, and Lord is so good. He gave me a professor who was the best professor bar none. Sorry, Pastor Robinson. She's the best professor bar none. First paper I wrote, she wrote on the paper, and she had, it was full with red, and at the end she said, don't be discouraged. She said, by the time you graduate, you're going to be able to write. She gave me a P on that paper. That was blessing. Indeed, it was a blessing. Okay? And she put me with this girl who I hated. Okay? I hated this girl because she was just so different from me. She was an Oreo, is the way I saw her. Okay? And she was just so different, you know. Anyway, she told me, the girl was doing the same project I was doing. And she told me, go to Yvonne and ask her if you can look at her chapter one. Okay, just ask if you can see her chapter one. And, you know, I have to give you some idea. I went to Yvonne, and Yvonne said, sure, I'll be happy. She's a Christian. We were both writing on our church. And Yvonne today is my best friend. Bar none, she's my best friend. And I met through Yvonne, her pastor, who mentored me when my pastor wouldn't mentor me, who discipled me when my pastor wouldn't disciple me. He said, you know, it was against every principle he had, but he felt led by the Spirit to give me what I needed until God gave me a pastor. Now, this man pastored two churches, okay, two decent-sized churches. He had cancer, and he died 3 months after I met him, but he had time for me. And he spoke volumes into my life. And when he died, I questioned God again, Lord, why would you, you know, I cried for me. I didn't cry for him. Why would you put this man in my life for such a short period of time? And I cried and I prayed. And then a few months later, I graduated from Geneva. And there was a guy in there speaking at our baccalaureate. And Yvonne spoke at our baccalaureate. She turned it off. Anyway, there was a guy speaking at our baccalaureate named Kenny. Dr. Kenny from San Francisco. I'll never forget it. afterward, we're at a reception in this great big room. And we're sitting way over in the corner, just, you know, sitting there, me, my brother, me, my friend, my mother, and Yvonne. And we're sitting there, not paying attention to anybody. McKinney comes from way, I see him when he starts coming. From way, I mean, I can't even tell you how far away it was. He starts walking straight towards me. And when he gets to me, he says, "I just came over to meet the graduates." I asked him what he said. And he says, "Well, no, somebody's sitting here." I said, "Well, we'll get another chair." And he sat down. And we were talking for about 2 minutes. And he said, "The Lord has led me to pray for you that he would send you a pastor after his own heart. He would send you a pastor who would disciple him." Now, he couldn't have known that I was dealing with, you know, some issues with my pastor. And after that, I had been praying about, you know, why am I in Geneva? Why do you have me here? And I couldn't get an answer. And then finally, the Lord, you know, told me, to my spirit, he didn't talk to me like he did before, but to my spirit, said, "You can't move to the next level until you get this level." So I thought I was going to go to a Geneva College graduate program, and I applied, but my job wouldn't pay for it. So I said, "Well, if I got to pay for it myself, maybe I better go to seminary." Because I knew the Lord had called me. I didn't know what he wanted to do. I had no idea. And it always perplexed me. He said he wanted to build his church on me, and I was like, "I know you already got a church. Jesus is, you know, your church is built on Jesus. How can you build your church on me?" You know, like I always kicked myself that I didn't talk to him longer. You know, I should have asked him some more questions. Okay, I mean, I thought about that, but at the time, you know, it just wasn't like that. Anyway, I applied here, and again, I wrote them all the stuff that I ever did. Didn't think they would accept me, and they did. And I know that I can't do the work. I know I can't do the work. But God, all I got to do is put forth the effort. And he blesses it every time. One prime example is one of Dr. Lowe's classes. I mean, I took a test, man. I had blanks. I know I had blanks. But I wrote down stuff. And then I told him, I said, "I didn't do well." He said, "Well, it's not about what your brother's called, what I see." And I got blessed. I got a B out of the class. And there's just so much, even down to preaching. I mean, you know, I remember the first time I preached. I was so scared I didn't know what to do. And today, I'm only scared if I haven't studied and prepared. I never know what I'm going to say when I get up here. But I know that I've done the work. And God blesses it. Honestly, even with me talking about what I've been through and what I've done, you can't have a clue. You can't have a clue about the stuff I've done. I wish I could have a testimony like Esau, that I was never a bad guy and I never did this. And I really do. I really do. I mean, I envy your testimony, because your testimony is one of those testimonies I tried to live the best that I could. And I never tried to live the best I could. I mean, I always wanted to please somebody else. And I always wanted to be a leader. And I always wanted to be liked. And it was never about Jesus Christ. But today, he has given me a bold stance. And I can stand against anybody and anything and tell you about Jesus Christ. Because I have him here.
The common element in all of them is that the Lord has shown you mercy. So you can share with Hisan and with Jim and with Carl and with me. I was the first of six children, and there was never any money to do anything. In the ninth grade, I knew I would go to college. I started reading the dictionary. You don't really do that in the ninth grade. And I studied Shakespeare, and I was interested in math and science. My senior year in high school, I held the championship records in swimming and walking at the University of Pittsburgh, 4 years completely paid for athletics. Also won in our high school, I won the academic scholarship. And I went to one of my teachers and I said, I have two of them, what shall I do? She said, well, take them both, because not very many people get both. So I unwisely took them both to find out that the academic scholarship required that I have a QPA of a B or better. And I was a math and physics major doing athletics at the same time. In my first year of college, I had sinned against God. I was, even though with a nominal background, being taken to church, I had so many perfect attendance pins I listed to the left every Sunday. there was a line of pins, perfect attendance every week for 7 years. I still have them someplace. There was no gospel. There was nothing. There was nothing that touched the soul of man. And when I was 19, I was invited to go to a church service, and I heard nothing. And as I was leaving the church service, it started to rain, and one of the men, whose name I do not remember, said to me, well, would you like to come and sit in the car and talk for a while? And my option was to go back into the church or sit in the car, so I chose the car. And the only thing I remember of the conversation, it was in downtown Pittsburgh. There used to be a neon light of a fisherman casting a net, casting a line, which is across the street from the church or on the same street. And he said to me, would you like to be a Christian? And I said, yes. And I was. It was non-spectacular. It was a Sunday night. And the next morning I got up feeling as bad as the night before, but I thought, since I'm a Christian, I should start reading the Bible. And so I read 5 chapters a day every day for the first 6 months, and I read the whole Bible. And I thought, I've probably missed a few things, so I'll do it again. And so I started reading again, and I remember going through it, and I thought, well, I probably missed a few more things. I better slow down a little bit. By the way, I've been doing that for the last 40-plus years, and I'm down to one word now. But anyway, when I left, when I was a senior in the university, I was interested in the Greek and Hebrew because I found out that beneath the English, the King James, which I could understand because I had read Shakespeare and so forth, that there was this other languages. And I thought, I'd like to know what those other languages are. And so I came to the seminary here in September of 1958. No interest at all in the ministry. I despised the ministry. As a stumble-bum confession that when you failed everything else, that's what you become. That was the stereotype I had. I had no interest in the ministry at all. But I came here, and for the next 3 years, I just suffered anguish in the desert and in being in the conflict. This is where the Lord wanted me, but this was not doing for me anything that was what I wanted, what I desired. I left here and went to Westminster because I knew that's where I was to be. I went from Westminster to the University of Pennsylvania, to Concordia, to Syracuse, where I was called to be the pastor there. I ran out of money in Concordia, so I had to do something, and what I had wanted to do didn't work, so I went to Syracuse into this dead congregation in the inner city, which was no threat to me because I grew up in the inner city, so that was not an unusual thing. And I knew I was to go there, and there was nothing at all that was attractive about Syracuse, nothing. And least of all was there any attraction for me being a pastor. But that's where I went, and within the first 10 months or so, I recognized that practically no one was paying any attention to me, and I was praying about it. I came to two conclusions, stay or go. Only one of two could resolve this. I got off from the prayer, and I decided I'll do whatever the Lord puts to my hand, and if it blows up, let it blow. And the first thing that came to my hand were two little boys that helped me build a fence, keep the dogs from the street, out on the street, and my children inside. The thing that happened to me as a pastor is that the preaching of the gospel which ministered to my soul. The preaching of the gospel transformed people, one person at a time. One person at a time. I never saw, we grew by subtraction for 7 years, which is also, there's no neutrality under the preaching of the gospel. It's either life to life or death to death. And we have people leaving and leaving and leaving, which is a very hard discipline. Where it serves me now, by the way, one, I'm not worried about how many people are there. Secondly, my own family was there. And if I didn't minister to anybody else, the people that are most important to me in this life were there. And they have all subsequently come to express their faith in Christ. And they're living consistent Christian lives in the interest of His church, and looking forward to everlasting life in His presence. And they're rearing their children with that same hope. So, after 7 years of intense struggle, where I learned the disciplines of the study of the Greek and the Hebrew, and many of those things I bring to your attention now were learned during those struggles. They were honed in the fires. This isn't hypothetical information. I think gradually the Lord began to send people. In 1980, my PhD, which had been thwarted repeatedly, was finally finished. And one of the reasons now, in hindsight, that it wasn't finished before that is, in reality, that the technology wasn't ready. And had I finished my PhD in 1963, when I first intended to, I would have missed a lot of education. That's true. I was in school all that time. That's 17 years. That's a long. Don't do it that way. But that's a long. That's a long time. And yet, in hindsight, the Lord provided that, that blessing. I finished my degree. And what I learned, the blessing of being a pastor. That's why when I use my titles, I use the term pastor. And the reason I'm here is I'm beyond the point where I can do the things that I used to do. I can't do them. It's done with. But I thought, here's an opportunity to come and help other men who will in turn grow into the next generation, and who may in some place or other be assistants to my children or my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren. Because I'll go some distance in the 21st century and that's all. I won't go very far, and I know that. But you and your influence will go further. So I thank the Lord for His mercy to me, His mercy to you all. I would have one word of caution to you, which I give to myself. When you give your testimony concerning the Lord's grace in your life, make sure that the focus never inadvertently slips from Him to you. And don't be tempted, which you weren't doing this, but sometimes I've heard people say, well, I have a terrible testimony, and they revel in that. Sometimes people who don't have these evils have a very limited testimony, and they're apologetic. And I said to them, yours is right. What I want for my children is what you have. I don't want them to have the scars, the marks of evil, because I'm forgiven. I'm forgiven. I don't have any question. But I bear the scars. When I was 2 years old, my hands were on fire. I don't remember it. There are the scars. And there are evil things I've done that leave their mark. I'm forgiven. But I'm wounded. And therefore, when you give your testimony, keep the focus there. And you're done with that. That evil is behind you. That's really part of one of the things I wanted to be able to say to you. That, yes, praise God, we are all saved by grace. We are sinners saved by grace. And in a way, there is no difference between us at all. But in the other sense, there are some differences which you should be aware of. Look down here just for a minute to the worship service. We're almost finished. I would suggest, to the extent that you can influence it, and if it doesn't interfere with things that may be hidden from my consideration, that you think about starting the morning worship service at 10 a.m. before any other activities in the church. When I first started preaching Sunday school, which is a good thing, was before the worship service. And I began to notice that even though I had spent so much time through the week preparing to preach, by the time I got finished with Sunday school sometimes, the problems, the disturbances, the difficulties of just being in a congregation of people would sometimes so distract you that by the time you got into the pulpit to preach, you were already sort of overwhelmed by 90 minutes of material that was irrelevant to preaching. That was the first thing. And the second thing is the children and young people whom we wanted and I wanted to see in the church have an attention span, and as loving parents, we need to know they can sit still for so long and then they can't do it any longer. And you're asking them to do something that they can't do and shouldn't be asked to do. So I changed the service from 11 to 10 to protect me so that the most important things I do in the worship service have my best energies. And I'm not distracted by a lot of things, so that even to this very day, when I'm getting, and I should perhaps not even tell you this, but I'll let you know it anyhow, you gotta do it in class. When I come into class, nothing else gets into my mind when I walk in that door until I leave here. I may put things down later on, but when I'm preparing to lecture, I'm very careful, or when I'm preparing to preach, I'm very careful to keep my things that are on my mind, on my heart to say, I keep them in focus. And I try not to let anything get in the way of that, because it can derail you and you never can recover. And you've all noticed, and you're almost all seniors, so I'm not in jeopardy of telling you about class secrets, but I'm very careful not to get derailed in class either. Right. And you need to keep that in your mind. Those are important things about preaching. We use the Psalms, exclusively, and I don't have any apologies to make for that. The thing that focuses my attention, though, is the sermon. That when I go to the sermon, I spend my energies in preparing to preach the word. And what I do after that, after the word is set up, is then I reach back into the book of praise and I find things that complement the sermon, so that for me, everything is always focused right on the sermon. And it may be a slight variation on the sermon in a psalm or something like that. So that if I were preaching on Romans, blessed is the man to whom I've freely pardoned in all the transgressions he has done. Covered is his sin. We all are in that blessed estate this afternoon. Well, that's Psalm 32. I will often announce, when I'm preaching on Romans, I will often use all of that. It just complements. It is the word of the living God, and it is powerful. The tithes and offerings are a part of worship. I put the tithes and the offerings after the preaching of the word. And I have tried to instruct people that the tithes and offerings are as much a part of worship as anything else. That you are giving to the Lord of the things he has given to you. And therefore, it should not be looked upon as a hiatus in the service, as an interval, as a break, as a something aside from the worship, that the giving of our tithes and offerings, which represents our time, our efforts, our talents, and God's blessing on our work of our hands, should have a place in the service that is important. Always in opening prayers and the opening of a worship service, always, I lift my hands like so. And I lift my hands in this posture because there are some people that don't pay attention to what you're saying, but they do pay attention to what you're doing. And sometimes the children will know, they will understand this. This is a gesture that they understand. So I open and have opened every service, and even in chapel sometimes, this way. I also do that in the classes, but it's not something I draw attention to. The Lord bless us. And I close every service this way. I'm very deliberate, very thoughtful. And those messages have gotten to the children. And this is asking God's blessing. And this is in the position and the office, not the person, but in the office of the pastor. I pronounce the blessing of God upon the people. One time I decided to see if anybody paid attention, and so I didn't pronounce the pastoral blessing. I just ended the service. And I don't know how many anymore, but one person came in particular, and she said, "Don't send me out into the next week without the Lord's blessing on my head." And I was struck that she picked up that mission. And I memorized the blessing. I memorized the benediction. I use the word blessing, but that's what I'm talking about. And I memorize other things so that they're mine, I can use them. And when I need that information, it's at my home, usually. The evening preaching, the morning preaching was from September through May, usually sequential, usually a book at a time. I dwelt on the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Acts. I did those things that were easy to hear, that could allow me to string a thread. That allows you then to address all sorts of questions. It also does not allow you to avoid questions you don't want to preach on. There are some things you would rather exempt yourself from. Preaching sequentially forces you to address the questions that are there. Also, it also teaches people that the preaching of the gospel has an orderliness to it, as opposed to a fragmentation approach. Most of the preaching I've heard as a young person, and even to much to this day, gives you the fragmentation approach, of choosing a verse from here and there and this and that. And people rarely see the great structure and the continuity and the way in which the Acts unfolds or the Gospels unfold. And that's why it's so important to preach that way. From September through May, I would preach in an orderly fashion. From May until September, I would choose topics, suggestions, problem verses. And if you're doing your work from September through May thoroughly, and you keep yourself notes of what you're finding, you'll have lots to preach on in the summer, for sure. And you will have a chance to rest also. The evening preaching I usually devoted along these lines, 20 minutes. And it's not just monitored by the clock, but the clock is important. 20 minutes for prayer, 20 minutes for praise, 20 minutes for the preaching, give or take a little bit. Because I wanted the children to come, I wanted the children to be a part of it, I wanted it to be a happy experience. And I use the evening services as a lighter time, so I still do that. This coming week I'll preach on baskets in the Bible, so that I can put these saints to sleep with a smile on their faces. That's exactly what I'm planning to do. I will teach them something. I have some important things to teach them. But I will send them out. They will remember baskets. The average age is over 70, over 80 probably. And I know that their minds are limited. They're not foolish and they're not dumb, but I will take them into account. The weekly Bible study, next to the preaching on the Lord's Day. The weekly Bible study. Start on time. End on time, no matter when you start, so that people can count on you. They take you at your word. And the weekly Bible study next to the preaching is the most valuable thing of building your congregation, the most important thing for a pastor. And next to that is hospitality. Preaching of the word on the Lord's Day, Bible study in the week, hospitality. Those are the things that, in my mind, in my ministry, and my judgment are really sources of blessing to you. And having started on time, it's not time to quit.
That line really helps, doesn't it?